Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, it's Susan here, and it is my first time calling in. I finally got the courage to do it. Having listened to this Sunday's Omnibus and listening to Rory.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
How marvellous. This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the spookylicious Robert Wilson, and with me I have the dangling horror show that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Lower Loxley's frightful family fun, folks, is you. This week's Dumpty Dum was sent in by Vicky Cole. It reminded me a bit of Monty Python.
I know.
In the new... What a thought. But I'm sure that Vicky was fully clothed.
He's got a picture of Terry Jones's bottom in my head now.
Well, so we're sent in by Vicky Cole, who'd been fiddling with her organ. Lucy, if any of our other listeners want to send us a Dumpty Dum or even become a caller in, how can they do that?
If you would like to leave us your thoughts, a Dumpty Dum or a plot prediction, or rewrite Geoffrey Chaucer, which is kind of the whole point, leave us a message on Speakpipe via dumptydum.com or call us on 02030313105. This week, we need to thank the lovely Shambridge for amazing voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, who appears later, Cosmo for his episode roundups, and to Derek for the in the back bedroom. Derek went to Halloween at Lower Loxley, and as we know, there was a bit of an accident, but Auntie Cardboard had bought her wet wipes and made him walk home.
On this week's show, we have calls from Witherspoon, Genevieve, Susan, Julie, Claire, and Catherine. And we also have a character count roundup from Mr. Mike Hatton. But first, let's brace ourselves for Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
We began the week with David at Lower Loxley dropping beef at the orangery and then oranges at the beefery. Meanwhile, Gerald continued with her one-woman bid to outshine the 2012 London Olympics opening ceremony at Lower Loxley with Elizabeth's spookalicious lady garden. David was worried about Rosie being frightened. For goodness sake, David, Rosie is practically an amoeba at this stage. I'm not sure she's going to be terribly moved by a group of sixth formers poncing about dressed as crusaders. Anyway, the terrible mummy, a tribute act to Elizabeth, came a little unstuck when the under fives were treated to a man plopping off the treetop walk and spraying blood everywhere. Nice work, sixth formers. Kira's in bits, said Emma, which suggested an ambitious level of audience participation. Elizabeth was already sounding somewhat shell-shocked, as even con them and charge solicitors had said that Freddie had zero chance of getting off. Don't be too hard on yourself, Elizabeth. You've been like a terrier for weeks, said David. Small, yippy and irritating. Get off my leg. There is a medical phenomenon I have noticed in Ambridge, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm afraid to say it features our old friend the testicle. Basically, a male child is born to an Ambridge family. It has a very high squeaky voice until it is 10. When it is 10, it is sent to the outer reaches, where there is a wailing and a gnashing of teeth. It becometh silent. Once its bollocks hit its boots, it returns to the village, talking its head off, where it sounds exactly like all the other men under 70 in Ambridge. Actually, we have to make a disclaimer here, as they have given Vervey, or Rawls, as Ben irritatingly calls him, a P.G. Woodhouse-esque 20s posh boy voice. And also giving him an inability to pronounce his R's is just cruel when you've saddled him with a name like Vervey. If you think about it, Vervey will shape up to be the classic Hardy Bronte villain. The bastard son of the philandering lord of the manor, handsome, probably a rakish gambler, swiping all the maidens from under the noses of the honest, horny-handed sons of toil like Johnny. Admittedly, Johnny's not half so horny-handed as Tom at the moment, but more of that anon. If we're following this track, then Rory will have drunk himself into an early grave by the time he's 32 and will be being nursed by Kira Grundy, God help him, waving bits of heather about and praying fervently. Anyway, so far he's not swiped any maidens, but he has killed a badger, which I think actually gives you points in the countryside at the moment. Neil has done his back in, I suspect, chilly night. Someone check if Susan's wincing when she sits down. Jazza was still sulking with Tom until Tom chased him round a pond for 5 kilometres in Wellies, like a cross between Benny Hill and Compo. They have called an uneasy truce into which Hannah will no doubt throw a grenade any minute now. Henry has got it in for Kira and saw the ideal opportunity to bash her over the head at karate. Lee, who only seems to have one solution for everything, which is... is that what Spider-Man would have done? Asked Henry to reflect on this, but to be fair, Spider-Man never saw his mummy stab his daddy and throw custard at the walls, or at least not in the films I've seen, and there's been loads. Brian, who only gets violently cross at other people's children doing bad things, but seems to be quietly proud of his own progenitor's fuck-ups, said to Rory, "You are a very naughty chap, you know, old man, driving about and that. I mean, you definitely can't have the money from the shoot." Oh, all right, then, here you are. He then became nostalgic. I still remember my first go on an old jalopy. Mandy Beesborough, what a woman. We had the first rehearsal of the Canterbury Tales, which sadly has been rewritten into modern English by Linda. She thought it would be easier for the cast not to have to learn how to speak an arcane language that no one understands. Oh, Linda, that ship sailed long ago, love. Right you are. Things took a surreal turn at Brooker's. I mean, there's not a lot of reality going on there at the best of times, but this week we entered new realms of lunacy with the announcement that the Brooker's cows are now going to be fed on the bits in the bottom of the biscuit tin and the orange creams from the Quality Street box. Within seconds of this announcement being made, a crushed Bourbon mountain appeared in the middle of the yard, being scaled by ants and small children. The cows were delighted, as so far all they've had to eat is grass. Not that they ever get much of a chance to have a go at that, before Pip, at the mercy of some new crackpot scheme, ushers them onto another bit of grass when they were perfectly happy with the first lot, or silage, which is basically grass chutney. I can't imagine what it'll do to the milk, apart from send obesity rates soaring, as it'll contain lactose, calcium, and hobnob. But they have got the kettle on, and they cannot wait. The end.
An absolute tour de friggin' force this week. And do you know what? As I was listening to that episode and I heard Brian mentioning the first time he rode on a jalopy, I thought, right, that's definitely one in the bag for Lucy V. Freeman, isn't it? Absolutely.
People now do that when they're on the tweet along. On, you know, I keep banging on about this, but I should say it again. I don't listen to the Omnibus on Sunday morning because there are so many jokes that are so much better than mine. I don't want to listen to it because then I might be tempted to steal someone else's jokes or be accused of doing so. So I now deliberately just do not listen at all. But then when I look at, when I do my searches for tweets of the week and I do hashtag the Archers, I see loads of people going, oh, that's definitely the monologue. Are the scriptwriters writing Lucy's monologue? Dumpty Dum said that ages ago. It's like, you know, we've become part of it now, which is really nice.
I am beginning to think that they're writing the script for us because there was yet another stupid bloody business name of the week. And do you know what it was?
I can't remember. I know there was one, but I don't remember what it
Bert,
was.
Bert picked his costume up from Borsetshire Fancy Dress. Borsetshire's premier fancy dress outlet. maybe they, maybe they
Worcestering fancy dress needs.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I guess maybe they do it because there's not going to be another business called Worcester Fancy Dress, and there might be, you know, Andy's Costumes or whatever. I understand that, but you know, and then there was another one, which was a quote of the week from Geraldine, which is when the mummy fell down, and she said, "Oh, it's very realistic, dangling down like that." I've had that line before.
I just thought it was going to be someone going off the roof.
I mean, God, yeah, actually, I mean, that's horrible.
I know.
And then, of course, there was your favourite line from last week was almost repeated this week in the rehearsal in the barn. Did you catch that?
No. Which one?
When Jazz was saying, what the hell is Nathan Booth doing here?
Oh,
what's
yes,
his
yes,
part?
Yes,
he's the blacksmith, yeah. But don't worry, yeah. It's a silent part.
They really are taking the piss now, aren't they?
Aren't they just? Aren't they just? Right, we're speaking about lots of characters. Should we have the character count roundup before
yes.
we proceed?
Yes.
Hello, you two. Mike, the anorak-wearing character counter here.
Aww.
With this month's statistical statement. The top five characters in October's count were Tom Archer, Josh Archer, and David Archer in equal third place, Johnny Phillips at number two, and Elizabeth Pargeter keeping her place at number one for a second month. Considering the gender ratio is predominantly biased towards the male characters, the top spot has been occupied by women for
hey.
8 of the 10 months of the year so far. Mm-hmm. Not surprisingly, given their positions at the top of the list in October, Elizabeth and Johnny also shared the accolade of appearing in the most consecutive episodes, 4 in total, towards the end of the month. We met a new character, Geraldine, the manager at Lower Loxley, who had previously been silently working for Elizabeth. And Ben Archer and Rory Donovan had the gaffer tape removed from their mouths to reveal that they spoke like 27-year-olds. And we also heard Anna Tregoran's voice again. As Freddie is not appealing, pun intended, maybe she will be called upon to represent Ben or Rory when their shenanigans get them deeper into trouble.
Ooh.
Finally, I've discovered why we've had very few Right You Are's in the past few months. There's clearly a Radio 4 quota, which was being used by the characters in Homefront. Well, now that's about to come to an end, unless they make World War One go into a fifth year. The Archers can reclaim ownership. We heard 3 Right You Are's in October, but sadly, no Hello U2s. Anyway, that's all from me for this month, and I'll be back with the roundup at the end of November. Bye.
He's good, isn't he?
He's very good. He's got that lovely, dry English sense of humour. I love it.
Yes. Unlike us, we're just...
Yes, we're just bawdy.
Willies and boobs, aren't we?
Yeah, we're more middle English, I think.
Oh, very good. Shall we hear from some more of our lovely listeners?
Yes.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Time to make yourself comfortable on the black leather couch, for it is Monsieur Witherspoon.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Robert, Millie Bell, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. It was a busy week in Ambridge, so let's get right down to business. First, talk about the boys of the village. Welcome back, Rory. Or can we send him back to sender? Are the scriptwriters trying to post a public service message that sending your son off to boarding school may not be the best parenting decision you can make? As for Ben, he was easily influenced by his pal, as many adolescents are. But by the end of the week, he demonstrated that he had a conscience and a mind of his own. It seems that Ben is to Rory as Johnny is to Freddie. Speaking of Johnny, while I may have been a bit hard on him last week when I accused him of having loose lips, one thing for sure is that he's a good egg. Now on to Josh, who just is not my cup of tea. For those who say that he has his own business to run and David and Ruth should not expect him to do so much around the farm, this week demonstrated that he's still very integrated into the running of Brookfield, and thus, he should be expected to contribute his time and effort to his share of the work. Josh's default position seems to be me first. He needs both David and Ruth to give him a kick in the pants to get him out of his own head, which seems to work only temporarily. I fear that in the future, he's the Donald Trump of the village. One last item on my agenda. I'm sure many will be talking about Elizabeth this week, so I'll be brief. On Facebook, we joked on Friday, So that was the disaster? Actually, it could be quite disastrous when the wrath of Emma is upon you. I don't think it's fair to have Lily leave uni. So is Lower Loxley headed to bankruptcy, and will Borchester Land be buying the property off of her? A prediction sure to go wrong. Talk to you all soon.
Now, he raises an interesting point there that some of the people had touched on during the week on Twitter, that every nice middle-class family-run business seems to be on its uppers at the moment.
Well, can I quickly read an email from Steve Parrott, who makes just this point? Are the scriptwriters determined to clear Ambridge of all successful middle-class businesses? Brian losing mahoos of amounts of money through poisoned land, Lizzie and Lower Loxley being hit by increasingly unlikely multiple acts of God or mammon, the veterinary. He's written it out as in James Herriot Harriet veterinary.
Yes.
Having to sell up. Darabee 389. The veterinary having to sell up because Shula's gone off him, and Helen's cheese losing its flavour on the bedpost overnight. My advice to Oliver is sell up and hightail it for them thar hills. It's Gay Grables next to the scriptwriter's sites. Presumably the abandoned Ambridge coal mines will lead to land slippage with half the hotel disappearing from sight. You haven't heard about the Ambridge coal mines? Nope, neither had we. But that won't stop it being used as a plot device to finally scour Borsetshire from all its middle class businesses. Fraternally, Steve the Pirate. Thank you very much, Steve. Yes. I think you said that better than we can, quite frankly.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the end of the show. Good night. Absolutely true, though. It's just... business is tough at the moment. But...
Yeah. I mean, when you think how... My sister ran a small business for a long time. You know, I was telling you about my Heath Robinson-esque microphone stand. It's just not worked. It's
as the gaffer tape peeled off.
Don't joke. That's exactly considering that in Ambridge there is this kind of I've had an idea for a business, and in 6 months' time it's doing brilliantly, and it just doesn't happen. It's years and years and years and loans and overdrafts, and you limp on, and like only one in seven actually continues for more than 2 years without going kaput. Yep. And there's so many little businesses in Ambridge that have just sort of, you know, like the tea rooms. Where the hell does the clientele come from for the tea rooms?
I don't know.
You know, it's just she can employ a full-time other member of staff. She, you know, it's just nonsense. It really is.
The turnover for something like that must be $250,000 to keep that running.
Yeah.
As they do.
Yeah.
With rent and paying bills and...
Yep. No, it's absolutely nuts. So I think... Every so often reality strikes and they think, oh Christ, we better make a few of these go bust. So all of a sudden that, you know, they're then stricken with something. I did like Elizabeth referring to the dead mummy falling out of a tree and sprouting blood in front of a load of terrified toddlers as a glitch. A glitch is something that happens when it's out of your control, Elizabeth, not something that is entirely within your control.
It didn't sound that bad, though, did it? I mean, I've seen some terrible things on CBeebies lately. Well, at least I think it was CBeebies.
I have been to some amateur dramatic things where I would have longed for somebody to fall out of a tree and have blood sprouting from his eyes. It would have been so much more interesting than what was actually happening.
It's just a way of cementing Geraldine. And I don't mean like cementing her to the driveway.
In a mafia way. No.
Yes. I mean, it's cementing her character within the storyline.
Yeah.
Because she's going to become more and more important, isn't she?
Yeah. Yes.
But what I...
And also, I liked Roy going, Roy, you know, everyone's in the car park furious. And she said, Elizabeth said, does he think he still works here? And I thought, you don't need to work there to know that that was an absolute shit show, Elizabeth. You don't need specialist
names,
knowledge.
Though. He was collecting names and addresses. But I thought he was just, you know, doing them a favour.
This is a bit of a long shot, but my cat, when she wants feeding or she's in a temper about something, she does what we call a bossy bottom walk, which is she walks very slowly right in front of you and wiggles her bottom about so you can't get round her because she's making you walk at her pace. in the hope that you're going to head straight to her cat food bowl. And that was my image of Emma, her bossy bottom walk, when she's in a strop about something. You could see, you know, marching over with her arms pumping and, you know, her bottom wiggling. He's like, right, Elizabeth, Kira is in bits, you know, and all that. But, you know, you need a bossy bottom walk if you're going to be an effective parish councillor, I think. But I think so. People should have slightly calmed down. Henry wasn't there, was he?
No, I don't think so.
That's good, because he'd have had PTSD, I should think.
He'd have probably loved it. He'd have yanked on one of the bandages and pulled an arm off or something. I did look up telehandler, I have to admit.
Did you?
Yes. You know, it's a tradition that every time we hear a word that we're not entirely sure of, whether it's Montbelliers or what was the other thing?
Montbelliard, isn't it?
Montbelliard, yeah.
Yes.
No wonder I thought there was an odd kind of cow. And they look like things.
Oh, culverts. We all looked up culverts.
I've been looking up a number of culverts in my time. I could tell you. And there aren't very many nice surprises up culverts.
No.
And it's a thing. It's a tractor with two prongs on it.
Yes.
Are they dangling from the pitchforky prongs?
I guess so.
I think you can buy a cage.
Why the hell is it called a telehandler?
Ah, well, you were mocking me. Moments ago.
You have actually looked this up, haven't you?
It's a telescopic handling device.
Oh.
And I have to, with my affliction, I have to have a telescopic handling device anyway, but that's a different story. But you can get a cage, like a cage thing on it. So it's like a platform. So it's like it's one of those squat tractors
with
the same size wheels. And then it's got a
bit like a forklift,
but it's got a jib on it rather than a forklifty thing. And
I did like the fact this week that the word telehandler and spookalicious appeared more than nearly any other word. Just hilarious. That was another week this week when you thought, oh God, please don't be listening if you've never heard before. You're going to be so confused.
Oh gosh. Right. Do you know what? I just looked at the screen here where my little radio studio is. And for a moment, instead of seeing Genevieve, I thought it was Geraldine. I thought, bloody hell, she's phoned in.
she's not got the time. She's doing everything.
Talk about multitasking. Anyway, no, it is Genevieve.
Hi, it's Genevieve calling from Toronto, Canada, with my Dumpty Diddler. So apologies if he decides to talk too. Fallon and Harrison. We got caught up around the time that they got married.
Oh.
This Montbelliard cow problem thing has just been bothering me, so I decided to look up Montbelliard cows, and actually they're ideal for organic farming, so I understand the Bridge Farm interest. Also, they're a very valuable cow to sell for slaughter, so I'm kind of wondering why Bridge Farm doesn't see the value in having a breeding program and selling the cows, since, you know, they could actually make some money at something. But anyway, that's enough about cows. I do listen to the Archers for the farming content, since that's my background. My plot prediction is that Helen and the karate instructor Lee will get together, and I think it's interesting that Ambridge is going to have this army of karate warriors, and Titchy is supposed to be coming back at some point.
Yep.
So I find that very interesting that Ambridge can rise up and fight him. I don't know. Maybe Titchy's creating his own warrior set of karate, and there's going to be this whole Mortal Kombat showdown. Probably not. That would also probably be ridiculous to put on the radio. But, I mean, if we can listen to paint colors and photos on the radio, then obviously we can have a karate showdown. Anyway, take care and talk to you all soon. Bye.
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 That's so sweet. That is the smallest listener. Who was a Harassment and Fallon.
Oh.
So it's like
sweet.
3 months ago? Old?
Oh,
that's very sweet.
And not making a sound.
No, there was one little squeak, which was quite nice.
I think just that to was from me.
apologise. Have you not taken your Remagel?
No. And one reason that Bridge Farm is not going to instigate a Montbéliard breeding programme is because Tony's going to be squashed by another bloody bull. Yes.
And also because it's a sensible business decision. So clearly they're not going to do that because they haven't thought about it for longer than it takes to drink a cup of tea.
No, they're going to set up a mobile cow horn shaving company, aren't they, or something like that?
Yes, yes, absolutely, yes.
Filing down the spiky tips of Montbéliards. Do they have horns? I can't remember.
I don't know. They're very pretty. Okay. Genevieve, the idea about Helen and Lee and Tichinob coming back, can you imagine? I think she's absolutely right.
Oh, yes.
I think that when he comes back, there will be some sort of contretemps and he will get a kick in the mush from either Henry or Helen, courtesy of Lee and his karate chops.
Well, Helen's already stabbed him. I don't think she needs to injure him any further.
Oh, I think she does.
Do you think she'll chop his knackers off?
You don't learn that in karate, how to chop someone's knackers off. I think...
how do you know? Where did you learn?
Well, nowhere where you did, if you think that you get to use knives. I think it might be Henry, and I think that's an excellent plot prediction. The zombie karate warriors, I'm not quite so sure about. But yes, the Henry retaliating or feeling.
I was getting images of, you know, the man with the golden gun where they're pursued by all those teenage Japanese karate girls. I was having images of that, kind of, apart from they're wearing smocks and straw hats.
Right.
Like the Grundies.
Yeah. So it's like a cross between the Wicker Man and the man with the golden gun. The man with the wicker gun. That's what it was. A wicker gun would be crap. I need to do a quick email from Welsh Witch. Okay. He said, does anyone else have difficulty in matching the Geraldine that Bert was describing pre-Halloween to the Geraldine that now has a voice? Yeah. Also, I've come to the conclusion that Josh is the only child from any branch of the Archers that isn't cosseted. Why? Good question. I do not know the answer to this. I think because he's very capitalist.
Yeah.
And they all have this slightly rosy view of, rosy view of... you know, being custodians of the land and all that. And he just sees it as, how can I make money out of this? But yes, I completely agree about Geraldine. The way Bert was describing her, she sounded like a woman on the edge of a nervous breakdown who was unable to cope, but she actually sounded incredibly calm and together. But maybe that was just because we were comparing her with Elizabeth, who is on the verge of a nervous breakdown. So I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, but often the way someone describes someone else doesn't have to be accurate. It's just their perception.
Yeah.
And true. From Bert's point of view, this is and how he expresses himself might not be very accurate in any case. I don't know. But she does seem very competent and calm. And does she want a job at my place? but she's still, I still don't think the place is fully staffed enough. I think there was mention of an events team.
Really?
Yeah. Oh no, the events team will do that. Well, that could be a freelancers or can be from an outside company, couldn't it? I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'd like to see a staff rota and a hierarchy list of Lower Loxley just to see how everything fits in. I mean, what happens?
It would just go Lizzie, Geraldine, Titcomb down at the bottom. Nothing. No one else. That's all.
We haven't heard from Lewis for a while.
No, but that's because he hasn't got a... Well, I always hoped that he might come back and court Auntie Cardboard, but I think he's a little too aesthetic to court a woman who is probably covered in dog hair and smells of horses all the time.
Yeah. I guess he's just one of those people that have been retired by just forgetting to mention him.
Yes. He's still living rent-free, though, at Lower Loxley, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, I wouldn't make too much of a fuss if I were doing
that. No, keep your head down. Quiet.
Crikey, yeah.
We need another caller in, and then I'm going to do Jennifer Corley's email.
All right, then. Julie.
Hello, Julie from Pickering here. Long time since I called in. Mm. But I'm really cross with Elizabeth at the moment, especially after listening to last night's episode. Lizzie's been fretting about the horrors of prison for Freddie, but thinks that the horror show that went on at Lower Loxley at the Spookalicious event was acceptable. She should have asked the actors for a full synopsis of how their show was going to play out before she allowed the booking to go ahead. I predict bad reviews from Lower Loxley's Spookalicious on the Friday evening. Social networks absolutely full of bad reviews. Therefore, no one coming to the rest of the Spookalicious weekend, and probably headlines in the Borsetshire Evening News. Will this lead to financial ruin for Lizzie? And when she asked Geraldine what Roy was doing there, as he no longer works here,
yeah,
I thought, that's right, Lizzie. You had an affair with him and then you sacked him. Roy should be wearing a hashtag Me Too badge. I fear it's all going to go quickly downhill for Lower Loxley and Lizzie, and it will be up to Lily to come to the rescue on a white horse fanfare to save Lower Loxley from financial ruin and save the Pargeter's good name. Okay, that's all I have to say on the subject, and best wishes to everybody else out in Dumpty Dum Land, and looking forward to seeing what other people have to say about this terrible state of affairs with the hanging mummy, etc. Toodles.
She's really got it in
the hanging gardens of Spookalicious. I am with Witherspoon on this. I really don't want Lily. I think it's what'll happen, but I hope it happens because Lily realizes that university isn't what she wants at the moment. I really hope she doesn't just come back to save Lower Loxley because her brother's been a massive dickhead.
Hang on, though. How is a 19-year-old university student going to save a stately home?
Well, because she's with it and Elizabeth is away with the fairies and Geraldine is, you know, trying to do everything by herself because Lizzie is worse than useless at the moment. And she has had experience. She did a lot when... you know, in the summer when things were going wrong for Elizabeth or things were tough, then, you know, Lily stepped in and got a lot done. She's quite a capable young woman, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think she's capable of supporting and yes, but she couldn't. Well, anyway, I think it would be odd for her to do it single-handedly.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. But I really, yeah, I if she comes back, fine, as long as she comes back on her own terms, not because Freddie's a pillock.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be better to spend 60-odd grand and get someone in to come and manage it properly.
Yeah.
Someone who's got experience and contacts and a degree.
You know, there is a TripAdvisor for Ambridge. There is quite a few.
Is there?
Yeah. And there's there's reviews of the Bull. And I don't know yet. I haven't looked whether or not there's a TripAdvisor review of Spookalicious. But please all go and look. And if there isn't, someone do one. I know you
okay,
will.
Okay, yes. You have been ordered so to do.
Next email. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Corley, who is at Ambridge Pony Club on the Twitters.
Oh, yeah.
She said, I'm a silent character, so I can't be doing with Speakpipe. Fair enough. Cameron Fraser got me into Ambridge when he left pregnant Lizzie at the service station. Same as me. We are the same generation of Archersites. Jennifer, could the scriptwriters institute a new rule that Joe Grundy has to be present, however unlikely this is, in every scene involving Ben and Rory? Even if this means he has to be in the back seat as they go joyriding. I need someone to say, now then, Ben Archer, or just a minute, Rory Aldridge, at frequent intervals, or I have absolutely no idea which character is which. These two sound like they have economized and used one actor. That's all, except I'm starting to look forward to a glorious Christmas at Brookfield. Rosie's first, great granny Jill flinging mince pies at grandad Robin when her middle name slips out during christening plans. Great aunt Elizabeth getting pissed and slagging off the entire family before weeping into the trifle. Then Russ pours oil on troubled waters as he hands round the turkey to Jean on Boxing Day. If I was Ruth, I'd book a cruise now.
Well, it wasn't last Christmas she was away. When was she away? A couple of Christmases ago when everything was going Hadley Hoch.
She was in New Zealand. Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Crikey. Well, yeah, maybe Lizzie should go to New Zealand.
Yes. She should just go anywhere. I don't really mind where she goes.
I'm almost beginning to feel sorry for her, but not quite.
Well, at least she's given up now. I mean, at least she's kind of accepted it.
Yeah.
You know, And you know, he's done a month, he's got 5 months left. And yes, it is horrible. And yes, he is going to be sad. And I think when she said, what got me actually in a, you know, I did feel sympathy, was when she said, and how many nights he's got. Because
150.
Yeah. Well, blimey, you you look that up as well.
But no, I do listen to the show. She said 150 nights.
But when your child is away, you do, nighttime is when you worry about them. It's okay. Weird. So something about in the daytime, they can put a brave face on things. But when they're in their bed on their own at night, that's when you worry. And that's when I would worry, I think. And when mine go on school trips, I always think, ooh. And the first thing I do in the morning is check my phone to make sure they didn't message me in the night. Oh. And they never did, apart from to say, I'm too hot, or something I can't do anything about, you know. But, you know, yeah, there's something about the nighttime. About your child, because you know, if they have a bad dream or whatever, then they come pottering into you when they're little, and then when they're bigger, that's when they start worrying about things. And you know, yeah, nighttime is hard. I can really see why she said that.
Well, I'm sure Freddie will be perfectly safe locked up in his cell with his cellmate at nighttime. Don't worry about that at all, Lizzie.
Oh, you're such a comfort, Robert.
Time to hear from Claire. Now, we haven't heard from her for some time.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. We've had some fantastic new caller winners recently, so welcome, everybody. And it's great to be part of the Dumpty Dum community. Just a quick reflection on Friday's episode. I'm sure I won't be the only one who's disappointed it wasn't some real person who got flattened by a cherry picker or whatever it was that they had. But two things of note, one of which was, hooray, Lexi's coming back. Oh, it was nice to hear that. I think Lexi's about the only sensible person in the entire village at times. And we do need to up the sensible factor a little bit, I think, in Ambridge. There's so many idiots running around at the moment. And here's my plot prediction, that something maybe will happen to Ruth. And then Lexi will get to be the outsider's voice of Chaucer in the Christmas play. Won't that be brilliant and massively confusing for Lexi? So I'd love to see that happen. You know, Ruth is an outsider, all right, but Lexi's the, you know, even bigger outsider. So let's see her take that role. The other thing on Friday was the shenanigans of the teenage boys. What is it with teenage boys in Ambridge? They all seem to be complete no-hopers, except for Johnny. And he seems to have had all the sense and consideration of all of them rolled into one. But I would like to hear Witherspoon's view on Johnny at some point, because it feels to me that he's a kind of codependency relationship in waiting. He's too eager to please. Yeah. He's too desperate.
Yeah.
And he's going to get massively taken advantage of at some point. Bless him. And I'd like to see him toughen up a bit, perhaps. But we'll see how that goes. Anyway, keep up the good work. Bye.
Oh.
Yeah, I People think she's like dead Johnny, right. I mean, they? I know. Yeah, but if Johnny got involved with Hannah, she would absolutely rip him to bits. He wouldn't know.
Yeah, but
which
what
way
a way
he
to
was.
Go.
But yeah, it's the emotion. Yes, I'm sure that aspect of things would be delightful. But it's the emotional stuff, because she's absolutely right. Yes, he is desperate to please. And although he did stand up to Freddie, didn't he? And he did say, no, I don't want to be your mate, because mates don't leave other mates. So, you know, maybe there's hope for him. Lexi coming back. I've forgotten where we are in Lexi's menstrual cycle. Does anyone know?
I don't know.
No, I've not been keeping
tabs. Lick my finger and stick it in the air and see. I've no result.
So is this going to be more turkey based to business when she gets back? I presume so. Although we haven't heard from Ian for ages. Oh, yes. Yeah. The Immaculate Conception. Excellent. Yep. Marvellous.
Well, if you're using a turkey baster, it's not all that immaculate.
It's a bit greasy.
Some of it
really.
Can get on the carpet.
Yeah. As long as you give it a quick rinse afterwards, it's fine.
Exactly. A bit of fairy on the carpet, you'll be fine.
But yeah, no, that's a super idea about the Lexi being in Canterbury Tales.
I thought for a minute when she was saying it, I thought that Lexi was going to convince Ruth to become the surrogate mother for Ian and... Oh, no.
No. No, I think that's a lovely idea. And it's quite nice on a sort of a social level as well with Brexit and everything. The idea of somebody from Eastern Europe playing the narrator of one of the most well-known ancient sort of English manuscripts. Is it? Yeah, it's quite nice. I like it a lot.
Oh, I don't know. Something's going to happen. People keep saying something's going to happen with that barn. And
if they mention the word fire one more time, I'm going to go berserk. But then don't they? And then we're all watching that, and then something else happens that we're not expecting. So
because that didn't that barn burn down a few years ago? Someone committed arson upon it, or one of their barns. Remember that kind of organized crime gang?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that was Clive Horobin's dog people, wasn't it?
Yes.
David was going to testify, so they burnt the barn down.
Yeah. So that's not going to happen. Then when I said on Twitter, oh, maybe everyone's going to be poisoned by the gas heater. And then some clever clogs, I think it was Cosmo, thank you, pointed out that the barn is open on all three sides or whatever, and that's probably unlikely. So get stuff. But I thought it was a good idea. Some people thought it was popular. Kerry Warbis was jumping and a whooping at the very thought. But there we are.
She just likes the idea of everybody in Ambridge dying. It's what most of her Twitter feed is about.
Carnage.
Yeah, exactly. How can they all die swiftly? Yes.
Right. Who should we have next? We have, you can choose, Susan or Catherine Rowan-Jones?
Susan.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. Catherine is definitely a finisher, isn't she?
Yeah, she is.
Hello, it's Susan here on the Twitter. I am at Susan S.H. Harrison, and it is my first time calling in. I finally got the courage to do it.
Yay.
Thank you so much for the podcast. They're absolutely brilliant. And having listened to this Sunday's omnibus and listening to Rory, and Ben driving around, I was most upset to hear it's only a badger. There is no such thing as only a badger. Badgers are important. And I wish they would stop doing this whole driving around stuff because I have PTSD from silly idiots driving into the back of me. And I don't like it. So can you please stop and just go back to all the farming stuff and tea and cakes? It's much easier, isn't it? And when I'm braver, I will add a dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-dum of my own, but I have yet to work out what musical instrument to use, because it really shouldn't be my voice. So much love to you all out there in Dum-de-dum-land, and speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye. One point to carry on from there is all this driving around. When I first heard the boys in the car, they were very breathless, weren't they? And there was a lot of grunting. And I thought, no.
It's 7:10. What's going on?
And he's got his joystick in his hand.
Well, I didn't know, because they said, first of all, I thought I got confused between a 4x4 and a quad bike. And I thought they were on a quad bike. And then William knocked on the window, and I thought, there's no window on a quad. What's he knocking on? Why doesn't he just talk to them? And then I realised what they're driving around in. So, I mean, you know that in the youth crime, what I am an expert on,
The
youth crime, is they call it talking, which is taking and driving away.
Yes.
And which shouldn't be talking, should it? It was taking and whatever it is. Anyway.
Talk, T-O-C.
Yes.
You keep Googling talking, it? I'll look it up.
Okay. I'm sure it's called talking anyway. Surely the fact that they are repeatedly stealing other people's vehicles for which they are uninsured, they should, I know they're ostensibly, supposedly not driving on the public highway, but surely that in itself is enough to merit more of a ticking off than just a, you shouldn't be doing that sort of thing.
Oh, here we are. Look, talking, noun, the clicking sound of the hands of a clock. Oh, that's it. Oh,
that's tremendously helpful, Robert.
Sorry.
It's T-O-C-I-N-G.
All right. T-O-C-I-N-G.
Go on the Urban Dictionary.
I've got touching here.
Have you? Stop
it. What does talking stand for? Here we are. Look. Talking. Oh, nothing. It's utterly ridiculous. It doesn't work. Sorry. Anyway.
I'm going to look it up now.
Okay.
Well, this is rivaling dreamt it.
What, choosing white paint. I know. Photographs. Oops.
And now my mic's fallen to bits again.
Is it? Oh, dear. Well, you're still on here. It still says blue snowball, so we're fine. You're on top quality audio, as far as I'm concerned. I was looking it up on my iPhone, so that's why it's rubbish.
I'm sure.
If it's taking and driving away, is it tadding?
No, it's definitely talking.
Okay. Well, maybe we can edit out this yeah. enormous
Sorry,
Rob. Hiatus to the program.
Sorry. I'm going to have to look it up. I'm sorry. When we've finished.
Speak among yourselves.
This is really annoying. I'm sure it's taking and driving away. Twocking.
Ah, twocking.
Yeah, taking without owner's consent.
Ah, because I was thinking, T-O-C.
I know, it doesn't make any sense. Owner's consent. Yeah. So what they're doing is twocking. And
they're twocking idiots, aren't they?
They're twocks. A couple of twocks. I think that merits rather more than, you know, it's not the fact that they're driving dangerously, they're upsetting the birds and blah, 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 but they're actually in someone else's vehicle without a license and uninsured. Yep. And they've taken it without consent, which is twocking. So, you know, that's rather more than Brian just going, oh, you shouldn't really be doing that, you know.
It was interesting.
And David sort of going,
it was interesting that it was
Josh.
Will. It was Will that caught them.
Yeah.
And Will is covering up for his late wife's.
Yep. Yes. Mystery. Oh, yes. I'd forgotten that. Yes.
Yeah.
Ah,
there you go.
Yes. Well,
that's all I have to say. I have
that's
nothing.
That's why they pay you the big money, Robert, because you know.
Exactly. That's
like
why
that.
I get the absolutely 0 pounds and pence for doing this. Well, I get all the adulation, and you get none of it. Do you get stopped in the street?
Constantly, but not because of Dumpty Dum.
Exactly.
People telling me that I've forgotten to put trousers on or something.
I'm still awaiting my first marriage proposal, though.
Oh, yeah. Let us know when it happens, won't you?
I will.
Yeah.
I will. I'll tell you when to buy a hat. Okay. Right. Catherine Rowan-Jones is next. Shall we go for her?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Dumpty Dummers Worldwide. It's Catherine Rowan-Jones calling in from High Wycombe at 88 on Ivy Fox on the Twitters, reminding you all of Royfield's handy hint to do it on Sunday afternoon before you get distracted by the new week in Ambridge. Three new voices this week. One readily identifiable by her gender and location. The other two... Another two generic young men, interchangeable and indistinguishable from all the other young men in the village. So that's going to be interesting to try and work out who is speaking to whom. Scriptwriters are better up their game. That's all I can say. Brian, Tony, interesting to compare how two paterfamiliuses, if that's the right plural, are handing over to the next generation. Brian resents it bitterly, complaining at the shoot, "No one paid attention to me. They were all listening to Brian Gibson." Whereas Tony, for all his many faults, for all his many, many faults, gave Johnny a list of pointers of things to look at in cattle and entrusted his daughter and his grandson to go off and look at the Montbelliards in Stafford. No, he didn't want to go with. They can make their own choices about their future project for that part of the farm. So, grudgingly, I give Tony some credit for that. Well, the goings-on at Lower Loxley, I think the horror is more evident in Elizabeth's mental unravelling rather than what was unfolding in the gardens, although that did sound pretty grim with the actors. Elizabeth, you never heard of... No, you're too busy, aren't you, worried about Freddie? Thanks for all you do. Love you all.
And then she was.
And then
gone. There she was, yes. She just got it just over 2 minutes, so we didn't hear the last bit of that. Maybe, can we put a little special buffer in there just for people to go, and they... She might have said something earth-shattering. I doubt it, because she was saying goodbye. But yeah, she's right about that's really interesting that the contrast between Brian.
Yeah, I hadn't tweaked that, but that's yeah. And he went, yeah, and Johnny said to him, "Are you sure you don't want to come, Grandad?" And he said, "No." He said, "No. I trust you and Helen." And yeah, that was really nice to leave that bigger decision. And I thought it was interesting as well that Brian said to Adam, "I'll help you in any way you want. I'll give you any advice you need."
Mm.
And I thought, that's not help. Advice isn't help. Unless you ask for it, it isn't. You know, what he wants is actual physical, you know, bodies on the ground sort of thing, not you say, "Oh, well, when I did this, I did it like this." You know, that isn't what he needs. But that's Brian's idea of help. I want to, you know, it's all about me and I, it's about my ego, and I still need to sort of to share my knowledge to show what a good job I did.
Yeah, I'd get him doing some of the boring paperwork, quite
yeah,
frankly.
Yeah, exactly. Filling out the bloody spreadsheets about how many toad flax there are in the herbal lays or something.
Toad flax?
Mm. It's a flower.
Crikey. Excuse me, I'm just going to look that up on the internet.
This is like live Googling this week. This is, watch Lucy and Robert Google things they don't know for an hour.
You'll be here a long time. A very long time. Well, that's all our caller inners. Well, that's all our caller. I can't say. You say it, Lucy.
That's all our caller inners.
Thank you very much. I couldn't have said it quite as well as you did. Let's take a very wee break and we'll come back with the social media roundup.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Joe Colbert here calling with the social media roundup for the week. We started the week with the amazing revelation that Ben, Geraldine and Rory have voices. They have vocal cords and use them. But one thing we talked about was the fact that the actors playing Ben and Rory sounded a lot older than the teenagers they're meant to be. And there was quite a bit of discussion on the Facebook group about this. But I like what Karen Cunningham said. She put forward a theory. Her theory is that Rory has been busy working as a diplomat with cravat in Buenos Aires for the last 10 years because there's no way the boy's been to a boarding school. He sounds positively middle-aged, and now we know why. Yeah, I think you're right, actually. Mind you, would he be a good diplomat if he's Brian's son? It's a wonder we're not at war with them, really, isn't it? So, also as well, Leonie Beaver said she suspects this will save them changing the actors in a few years when they're older. So basically, probably money, BBC budget cuts. It's austerity casting, Leonie. That's what it is. It's austerity casting. Also, as well, talking to Geraldine, we had a bit of a mumbly episode on Monday where quite a few people misheard Geraldine as Jolene and got confused.
Oh.
And I misheard Geraldine when she was talking about the Halloween decorations and she said, "I haven't finished hanging up my bats." and I heard that as haven't finished hanging up my baps. You can imagine my innuendo meter went off the scale and exploded. But Franklin Habit said, I'm pretty sure the line was, I haven't finished banging all these chaps. The poor woman has taken on everything Elizabeth used to do. Mm-hmm. Which, Franklin, that's my comment of the week. That did make me laugh until I almost wept. Anyway, we also talked about Neil and the fact that he's off sick at the moment. And could this be the beginning of a coup at Barrow Farm by the mm. Hannah House of Horror? Maxine Grice said his back pain may be from her stabbing him. Mm-hmm. Jerry Rowley said, too much chili. But also, another one I comments of the week was Tom Williams, who said about Hannah taking over, wouldn't that be a coup de twat? Yeah, it's still making me laugh. We also talked a little bit about the interactions between Lee and Helen. Is there something going on? Is there something developing? Chris Walmsley said, please don't let Lee get involved with Helen. He sounds a nice bloke. Whatever did he do to deserve that? Mm. But Gordon Bearvid also made a prediction, which I really hope comes true, about Henry and the karate lessons. Gordon Bearvid said, alternative prediction, Kira starts pushing the wee bastard back. Yes, that's what we want. Also as well, we had a post because I'm still unconvinced with this Chaucer thing. So I asked Chaucer fans to talk me round. And there's some brilliant posts. Again, go and look on the Facebook. Some really brilliant posts about why Chaucer was important and why it's a good choice. But it was Andrew Disbury that really caught my eye when he said, I can't see it being a laugh a minute. I must say, maybe the scriptwriters have a devilish trick up their sleeve, which I believe is how you pronounce it in Chaucer language. Anne Liddon said, I'm always unconvinced by the Christmas show. Would you really persuade all these non-actors to learn so many lines and give up their time each year?
Nope.
Well, I guess it shows the power of Linda Snell. And talking of which, I'm not going to go into it, but go and have a look. We've got a really good post about how David's a coward and doesn't stick up to Linda. Doesn't stick up to anyone, really. But also as well, you know, what's going to happen? I think the barn's going to go up in flames. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, talking of things going up in flames or disasters, the scriptwriters led us a real merry dance with their hinting in the Radio Times and, you know, through different things dropped into the plot that there was going to be a big disaster at Lower Loxley. So we asked for predictions. Martin van der Heuvel said, Geraldine will hand in a notice. Yep, Martin, that'd be a real disaster, especially at the moment. Janice Betson said, Nigel's ghost will appear at the foot of Lizzie's bed, point her finger at and say, Lizzie, you're letting my ancestral home go to rack and ruin. Get up and put it in good order for when Freddie comes home. Could be a guest appearance by the spirit of Nigel there then. Charlie Harding said, the Brookfield Fox, with a taste for blood, devours Geraldine and Lizzie doesn't even notice. Christine Coulson said, I think a rogue firework, but it's what Christine said next that made me laugh. And she said, my mate Phil Cattrall thinks the disaster will be the dance troupe just being there. And Stephen Thomas said, the disaster, drug shortage. Well, there's no dealer anymore, is there? It's getting hard to get. But when it came, it was a little bit underwhelming. I think that was a general view. Was that it? And felt we maybe led up the garden path a little bit. But we did talk a little bit about whether Emma was overreacting or whether, you know, whether Lizzie was underreacting to what happened. But one comment from Thea Cochran, I think, sums up Emma sometimes, which is Emma is basically the audio version of Mumsnet at this point. But quite rightly points out, she was there then to show that Elizabeth isn't in control of things at Lower Loxley because she's been distracted. Also, Marie Harris said, I'm surprised not to hear Kirsty, to be honest, but I'm sure she will on Sunday. She hasn't had a bandwagon to jump on for a while. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right then. Janice Betson, again, second comment from Janice Betson, said she felt sorry for the poor badger. And Terry Woodruff, I think, summed it up for everyone. That was a disaster. Yeah, you really did lead us up the garden path, script writers. Anyway, so that's kind of the social media roundup for the week, but I'm going to add a little bit extra in. And Royfield and Lucy don't know I'm doing this.
Oh.
But I'm going to do it. So one of two things will happen. Either this will work and it can become part of Dumpty Dum, or else I will be summoned to the top floor of Dumpty Dum Towers and hauled over the coals by higher management. But we have Map Corner. Yeah?
No!
Map Corner. It's good, I guess. I'm not going to say too much because
he's not doing Map Corner.
A radical cartographer on Twitter about this. But I'm going to introduce a new corner based on the fact that this is a show about rural areas. Welcome to the Joe Grundy Folk Custom Corner, where each time I do an update, I am going to tell you a little bit of rural folklore. And tonight's is basically about the fact that this week it's Bonfire Night or Guy Fawkes Night in Britain. But there's a place in just outside Exeter on the south coast called Ottery St Mary, where they don't just do bonfires and fireworks. What they do is set fire to barrels in something called the barrel rolling custom.
Yep.
But barrel rolling really doesn't do it justice because it's far more terrifying than that. These barrels are open-ended and inside they're coated with flammable tar. The outside is then completely covered in paraffin. They're set fire to and people carry the flaming barrels on their backs racing round the village until the barrels collapse and the fire is running down their back. And apparently this is an ancient folk custom.
Yep.
It's also terrifying. I've actually been down and seen it and it is absolutely terrifying, but kind of fun to watch. So anyway, that's our folk custom, the barrel rolling of Ottery St. Mary. This week's folk, Joe Grundy, folk custom corner, barrel rolling. Anyway, that's me done. And I will see you all in a fortnight.
And Dumpty Dum would like to add that please do not try this at home. No.
That you can actually, for those of you that are interested in this, you can Google it. And as we've been Googling everything this program, but it's just happened. It happens on the 5th of November and there are lots of films of it happening. And it's astonishingly dangerous and just fabulous, I think, anyway.
Do you think if those people who rolled the cheese downhill went for a night out with the people from Ottery St Mary, they'd end up with a fondue.
Yeah. Oh,
perfect. Absolutely perfect. This show isn't scripted. Well, that bit wasn't anyway. Yeah, great minds think alike and corny comedy gagsters also think alike as well, I guess. Lucy, speaking of comedy, would you like to hit us with some tweets of the week?
Dominic Young. Oh, David has developed Rosebud as a nickname. That has just made my bum go funny. Being Doris, just a very quiet, stately, dignified and disgruntled tweet about the new plans for the dairy food at Brookfield. Our staff room would have had those biscuits. Marmaduke said, I'm not sure that Bert in fancy dress lumbering out from a bush near the orangery is going to be as great as, say, the Pet Shop Boys playing Loxfest. No, really not. Marshall Laws, lovely Beth, said, the Archers, where you can begin with a discussion on winter feed prices and end with a murdered archaeologist with blood dripping from his eyes. Exactly. That's what I meant about this was not the episode, this was not the week to listen to if you were a newbie. And Tweet of the Week was from Jamie D. Jam Spangle, who I believe was Tweet of the Week 2 weeks ago, so he's doing very well. But there were a bit of kerfuffle We're lucky they weren't a scuffle. When that mummy did die with all the blood from its eye, I almost threw up on me duffel.
Oh, that's tweet of the month, not we.
I know, but tweet of the
sentiment. Good work, yep. Sir. Good work. Is it a sir? Did we say it was a sir?
It is, yes, Jamie.
Well, Jamie can be a girl. I'm not going to make Royfield's error.
No, but I think this is a bloke. I think it's a bloke.
All right. Well, pictures as proof, please. Mm-hmm. I'm talking face pictures.
Yeah, I was going to say. How much proof do you need, Robert? Send those pictures to Robert.
State of my love life, I don't need any proof.
You'll just go with what you're given. Yes.
Exactly. Now, good folks, why don't you pop along to Patreon and help us keep this little show on the road, or at least stop it swerving into a ditch and hitting a badger. That's patreon.com/dumptydum. And you can sign up for like £2, I think it is, £2 per show. It helps us buy all the headphones and microphones and software and razor blades it takes to put this show together. We really appreciate everyone who gives us a bit of loose change. We do mention you from time to time, but most of all, we love you from the bottom of our hearts, do we not, Lucy?
Yes. And the heart of our bottoms, yes.
Well, yes, well. You spoiled that then, didn't you?
Sorry.
Anyway.
Can't help it.
No, you can't. Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105. That's 0203 031 3105 to leave us a message. You can find us all on Twitter at Dumpty Dum. Lucy is at Lucy V. Freeman. Royfield is at Royfield. And I am at Naked Fingers. And you know, as I was reading that bit, you know when you're reading something out and then your mouth just starts filling up with sweat, with spit. That's what was happening there.
Nice. It does that sprinkler thing.
Yeah.
Like the sprinkler's about to accidentally come on.
A bit like Roy Hattersley's spitting image puppet. Anyway, I thought that we would leave on another Dumpty Dum.
Hang on. I need to ruin the mood with my Daily Mirror headline.
Oh, sorry.
Before we have the nice piano music.
Shall I fade this out then?
Yes. Who's that? Who's doing the piano?
I think that's Vicky again.
Is it? God, yes, she's talented, isn't she?
I know.
Anyway, I need to lower the tone considerably. Okay. Right. Because every week now I find my favourite Mirror headline of the day. This one is, pensioner performed sex act on his roof while dressed in ladies' underwear. Barry Mason, 68, took part in a bizarre sex display wearing a blonde wig, spelt with an H, bizarrely, and a G-string on his head. And he said, his comment was, "I am not a pervert, I'm a naturist," and argued that normally he was shielded by a washing line. I bloody love the Daily Mirror. It's like, it's just another world of absolute catastrophe. Ah, yes. Anyway, there we are.
Oh, good.
We can now have the very gracious and graceful Vicky playing the piano.
Yes. Until next week, good listener, fare thee well and goodbye.
Key change.
And there she
Very
was.
Very good.
Right.
That sounds like, did you watch the thing with, oh my God, what's he called? Mark Rylance. Wolf Hall.
Oh, yeah, I know of it.
Yes,
I
didn't and that watch. Had lots of harpsichord music and lots of very somber piano music as everybody was dying of the plague in the background, and it sounded a bit like that. And interestingly, probably not interestingly, the composer of that music was somebody Van Kampen, who is Fallon's sister.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
That is
completely
interesting.
Forgotten what she's called. I shall now look it up on Google.
Why don't you do that while we all sit and listen?
Who is sponsoring this show? I've actually got the album. So
Google, they were on strike this week. Right. I think while Lucy, are we going to include this Google in it? Or you know what? People used to love the bit after the show. You know, when we used to record it in a different way and we go, right, that's the end of the show then, bye, and then talk about our private lives and
for 100 hours, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what a lot of people said they miss about this. And I think maybe we should be doing a Dumpty Dum Extra where we just have a chat.
Talk about bollocks. Well, there's nothing on here about this, but I know she did. Anyway, I'm going to look it up now.
Wolf Hall Music?
Yes.
Hey, Siri, who wrote the music for Wolf Hall?
Debbie Wiseman, she'll say.
Okay, I found this on the web for who wrote the music for Wolf Hall. Take a look.
Too bloody lazy to read it out, isn't she? Debbie Take Wiseman. Yes.
Yeah. No.
Or maybe she was music supervisor, or maybe she made the tea for Debbie Wiseman, or...
No! I'm going to put Van Kampen, because it's definitely her.
Van Kampen, Van Beethoven, wasn't that?
Van Kampen. There you go.
What? She what? Say that again, dear.
Claire Van Kampen.
Okay. And she did the music for Wolf Hall, you say?
She did all the music that's the original, like she wrote she arranged a piece called R. Robin, which was like a folk song, which was played by the lute player in the court.
Right. So what you're saying is she composed all the diegetic music.
Yeah. Woo! Get you. Yes, she did.
Me degree didn't go to work, but to waste, did it, really?
Yeah. Very good. So she did the trumpet parlay and all that sort of thing, which is great.
Well, no, I've done the... You're spoiling that joke. No, I've had a pretty good joke. I was about to say, I've done the odd trumpet voluntary myself. I thought that was quite a good joke.
We started this... Before we started recording, ladies and gentlemen, I was hearing a lot about Robert's lavatorial habits and the effect of not having coffee and then having coffee. And trumpet voluntary, I think, probably came into that.
But that was fairly involuntary. I mean, I nearly didn't make it. It was touch and glow. Touch and glow? Touch and go, if not touching cloth. Right.
My other half was on the tube once with a friend of his who had, you know, those coffee beans that are covered in chocolate?
Oh, yes.
And you suck the chocolate off. He ate the coffee beans.
Yes.
And he ate about 30 of them because they're really
God.
Nice. And anyway, they then... After an extremely rich three-course lunch, bottle of red wine, blah, blah, blah. It was some Christmas thing. Got on the tube and there were like two stops in. And Simon was chatting away with the bloke. And then he suddenly said, "Are you all right?" And he'd gone pale. He was clutching his stomach and there was sweat standing out of his brow. And he said to Simon, "I need to get off. I need to get off this tube right now." And Simon said, "Are you okay? Are you ill? Are you going to be sick or something?" He said, "No, I just need a loo right now. Don't talk." He was running down the platform in this peculiar clenched buttock.
Oh, God.
Trying to get to a hotel lavatory in time. But he came to ashen.
Oh, dear. There, but for the grace of Nescafe, go I.
But on the tube, I mean, that is not a good...
Oh, no, that's one of the worst places, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they used to do those... The trains between Oxford and London used to have no toilets.
Right.
Because, oh, you're only on for an hour, so you don't need to go to the toilet. Yeah, whatever. Oh, one of my worst nightmares, that would be. Oh, crikey.
You see people pacing on the last after closing on the tube at night. You see a lot of people, particularly between Finsbury Park and Seven Sisters. There's a really long bit. If you can get through that bit, you know you're going to get home okay. But you can see a lot of people pacing and humming, and they're just like, you know, oh my God, just let me off.
I went to see Alistair Roberts, who's a Scottish folk singer. Saw him last week. Last Saturday, someone took me as a birthday treat. Thanks for the card, by the way. And
when was it? I thought I could have been on
22nd of October, everyone.
Sorry, Robert.
I will. I'm 2 years and I'll have a big 50th.
That's fine.
So.
When's my birthday?
I don't know.
There you go. Well, if you don't remember mine, I shan't remember yours.
It's June the something.
Yes, well done. That narrows it down.
So if I send you a card every day of June.
Yes, that'd be lovely.
And so I was sitting here and I had this kind of thing. You know, I thought, I'll just go for a tinkle before I go and sit down, because we're on the front row. It will be mortifying to have to get up at any stage, especially seeing as, you know, your eyes are at knee level with the performer.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I didn't really do anything. Sat down, and as soon as he strikes up, you know, does the first arpeggio, I think, oh no. Now, I don't need it now, but I know in half an hour I definitely will. Now, if you need a wee in half an hour, that's okay, unless the concert is an hour and 15 minutes long. And when you're crying urine, the relief when he goes off and you think, you can rush off, and then I had to come and sit at the back for the encore.
Right.
But the sound's a lot better at the back, so I wish we'd sat at the back anyway. Anyway. But yes, I had a very painful, eye bleeding, full bladder experience last Saturday. And it's something to do with me being 48, I imagine. Right, we've done 12 minutes of this crap. Should we say goodbye?
I think we should. Yes.
All right then. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.